We're going to start first with these guys just telling us a little bit about what each of you think social TV means. Over to you, man.
Okay. You know, for social TV for us is kind of an evolutionary state. You know, we are clearly involved much more heavily in digital than we have been over the last 6 years. And with the advent of HBO Go and thinking about the combination of the viewing experience and a social experience in a one kind of interface, that we're at that point now where we think about social TV as what we're doing outside of the viewing experience, and we're incredibly active there. You know, we're on every social platform. We have HBO Connect, which is our sort of aggregated V1 right now, but beta kind of social experience around everything, all the HBO shows. So if you think about it in terms of plugging in conversationally, wherever you care to watch, that's agnostic to where you watch, but plugging in conversationally in social, been very active, very experimental. On the product side, which is where we are now, like I mentioned with Go, we're trying to think of, okay, social TV in the watch experience, on the iPad, on the Xbox, on the Samsung TV. What does that mean for HBO content? What's the right experience to have for social TV? And basically figuring out how we evolve that in a way that's not too disruptive to consumers. You know, social TV for us has always been a factor. Before internet, before social, it's about water cooler stuff. And so I know that always gets said, and it's really true, but HBO particularly has been, has really benefited from that level of engagement that our consumers have, not only one-to-one with the show itself, but also as I'm speaking with my friends and enjoying and experiencing our content in a social environment. And we're trying to figure out, okay, how do we take that to the next phase? How do we take that where it's not, it's still, I guess, honors the sanctity of the viewing experience, really, particularly around HBO content, which tends to be a little bit more immersive. And then how do we also bring the tool sets for social, the people that want to engage, and make sure we're there in the right way that they want to be there?
Great. So from our standpoint, we are a discovery service. So what we're trying to do is to help consumers essentially find and engage with all the content, movies and TV shows they can find on those new devices. So when you think of the concept of social TV, for us, it really means three things. It means first, as I'm looking for something to watch, obviously recommendations from people I know have been something that have been around forever, and so we're trying to recreate this experience on the new screens that people are using, such as, you know, iPads, iPhones, smartphones, tablets, and connected TVs, and leveraging all the social networking there. So that's sort of tied to the discovery. Then there is the engagement while I'm watching. And so here, obviously, it means very different things depending on the type of content you're watching. I'm sure we're going to talk about that. And then there is the post-watching experience where, you know, usually when you've seen something you really liked, the first thing you want to do is to talk about it or to share it with your friends. So for us, social TV means engaging around the content, around the information about the content, and everything that has to do with the show you're watching, and trying to bring this conversation at the point where you're also discovering the content.
So in terms of social TV, when we take a look at the television industry, which has been around for the better part of 60 years now, when you think about television, television has always spurred conversation. So, you know, whether it was I Love Lucy in the 1950s to, you know, the Fonz and Happy Days in the 70s, or even really popular commercials like the Where's the Beef from Wendy's or the 1984 ad from Apple. So people have always talked about what they watch, but I think one of the challenges that has really existed in the television industry is really being able to tap into these conversations live and, more importantly, in mass scale. So when we talk about social TV, I think, you know, from our perspective at Bluefin Labs, it's really about the idea of shifting from impressions to expressions. So there was actually a really good quote last year from the CMO of Coca-Cola, and I'll paraphrase it a little bit, but it basically went along the lines of, while I'll certainly be paying attention to the impressions of our activities on the marketing front, I really pay more closely attention to the expressions of our consumers as a better measure of our success. And I think that's really, when we're talking about social TV, what we're talking about is the fact that impressions have been things like Nielsen ratings points, GRPs, TRPs, but now there's the opportunity with technology through the second screen experience to really be able to understand very quickly and immediately, and more importantly in mass scale, what are people saying about my brand, about my products, about my services, about the content that I put out there in the marketplace, and really be able to drive more actionable information to, you know, better shape what is a, you know, $70 billion market.
So, Jack, I think that's that's a great turn, because we talked about social TV before. We kind of said, so what? Is it redundant, right? Is social TV redundant? TV is social. And ideally, what we're trying to look for is what is the where do we go next? The media ecosystem is so complicated, right? So we shape this panel around sort of content and programming towards new social discovery platforms, and then analytics, right? Really measuring what's going on. But so why do we care? I mean, what from you, Allison? Really, what are you trying to dig out? Like, what's most important? People are talking great. They were talking forever, but really, what are you trying to get to now?
I think, you know, part of it is as a company that is a wholesale company and trying to, you know, pin down, we don't own the consumer relationship, but social has afforded us a really great sort of touch point into what's happening on the buzz and a one-to-one level, right? So not just in a PR or a press release or sort of an article or something like that, but really what consumers are saying about content, about our products, about their experience.
So you might want to tell people what do you mean by you're a wholesale company?
Makes it sound like, So we, you know, HBO, we're a content company, and we're distributed through cable, telco, and satellite providers. So HBO Go, for instance, is an authenticated product. You have to have a linear subscription through one of the those three carriers to kind of to access HBO Go, which is fine with us. It's TV everywhere. You can look it up for the definition. But, you know, from our perspective, we use social not just around Go, but obviously around just in general. And so looking at what's happening on Facebook, what's happening on Twitter, who's checking in on GetGlue, who's coming to HBO Connect and participating in conversations with our talent, who's actually following live chats, who are the biggest fans who are really providing a lot of energy and heat around our shows and making sure that we have some sort of relationship with those guys, whether it is just allowing them to link, giving them special content, giving them access to things earlier. You know, that's an amazing thing for a company like us to make sure that we're keeping our pulse on what people are feeling about our content. So social to us, and it's incredibly important from that perspective. And from a product perspective, it's really about, you know, going back to engagement and tools and that people expect to use when they're watching our content. And, you know, I think from a product development perspective, it's challenging because you think about we do a lot of research around what consumers want, how they behave around our shows, you know, and just track their usage in general. And through seeing what we do in social, in the broader social scale, we know that people get very active right before the show. And right around the show, there's a dial down in what's happening on social because, frankly, maybe unless it's Kenny Powers, and there's a lot of activity, as there should be. But, you know, if it's something like Game of Thrones, you're kind of dialing down and sort of watching, and then you're picking back up afterwards. So how do we create a suite of tools in a Go product, for instance, that allows you to kind of participate in that but not be interruptive? And that's, you know, that's half of that is listening outside of Go and figuring out and watching behaviorally what people are doing and then taking the best of practices to make sure that experience is good inside of Go.
But HBO has this great brand cachet, right? So HBO is known for great content. But, Bien, how do people discover content that, I mean, before, you know, there were so many channels. You had this nice linear navigation model, right? We don't live in that world anymore, or certainly won't be living it in the future. So what about your perspective on social discovery is really important?
Yeah, I mean, so I think you're absolutely right. There are a few challenges. But first of all, you know, when you said sort of social TV, that's redundant because TV is social. What's interesting is you could say, you know, Facebook is redundant because people were social. But then now they have different tools to express this. And I think one of the needs that is clearly expressed is that the entertainment industry sort of follows those tools so that people can have a more effective conversation around the TV and the movies they love. So I think just simply put, you now have a different behavior where you have sort of hundreds of millions of people that are using those tools online to exchange ideas. So you need sort of to plug the entertainment industry into that world in a way that makes it very efficient. So the challenge is, one of them is that this emergence of accessing content like HBO Go and others on those new devices is very new, right? I mean, connected TVs or iPads were not around like, you know, a few years ago. And so there's a lot of plumbing that needs to happen first, right? And that's kind of what's happening right now, having the content available somewhere. And once Fanhattan is an application that, for example, ties all those applications together. So if you say, you know, I want to watch The Sopranos, I can find all the different sources where I can watch it. So that's kind of the plumbing. Now, once you have that in place, this is where it gets interesting from a social TV standpoint, because you can say, okay, well, what if I could now connect all my Facebook activity in here so I can import from my friends, you know, even whether or not they're using GetGlue or Fanhattan, just from the fact that they're on Facebook, I want to know what they like, and then make recommendations based on that. So that's the first sort of social experience where I'm kind of replicating the, you know, water cooler conversation about, hey, you should really watch that show. And now I'm sort of creating that conversation online using the services that people use, whether it's Facebook, Twitter, or others. That's the discovery aspect. And now what's interesting around the engagement aspect during the show is, and, you know, we think of it in terms of trying to do something that's very scalable, which cuts, you know, regardless of what type of content you watch. And what's kind of interesting is, and by the way, this is another word you're going to hate, which is second screen. So I don't know if I'm there already in terms of hating it.
Yeah, I hate that
so I'm going to try to limit, you know, this kind of experience of doing something while you're watching means very different things to very different people depending on what you watch. If you watch a sci-fi movie on TV, you're likely going to want to engage maybe on, and if you love the show, you want to learn about the backstories and all the, you know, so you want to go deeper into the storyline, right? That could be one type of experience you want to have. And sort of talk online with people about that kind of content. If you're watching, you know, a comedy, then the conversation has to be a lot different. It's about the jokes you're hearing, et cetera, et cetera. And if you're watching, you know, a show like American Idol or others where there is engagement there, then this is a lot more about voting and doing things like that. So the challenge around having those social experiences is that if you think of it from a tool standpoint, what you have to create as a product to engage consumers, then you have sort of a spectrum. On one end, you could have an app that's completely designed for one show. And then the content is produced for the show, and you download the app, and it's called, you know, Game of Thrones, you know, right. For example. I don't know. And that's, so then now you have a lot of relevancy that app is completely tailored to the content. But the challenge is, from a consumer standpoint, I now have to sort of download one app for every show I'm watching. And on the other end of the spectrum, you can think of what is the common, sort of the completely standardized second screen experience across everything, but then the problem is that the common denominator is very thin. So one of the challenges that I think we have as an industry is to create experiences that are social, that are somewhat standardized, because as a consumer, I want to have a conversation with my friends about a show using tools that are kind of the same, but also enable a lot of customization for the type of content.
Spotify updates, right? So I know right. everyone is listening yeah. to. And these readers, right? Every article everyone is reading. And so I've just started turning that stuff off. So yeah. It's not really any longer bringing me the social discovery value that it used to.
Because it's white noise.
It becomes noise. So there's two parts of this. One is, how do you avoid the noise? And then two, do you believe that there's some sort of difference between, I'm perfectly willing to share what I'm listening to with my friends, but my television viewing habits actually probably have more resonance with strangers than people I know? Yeah, so what do you see in the data, or what do you think about that?
Yeah, so I think we, as we take a look at the information, it's the one thing of being able to market one-to-one versus one-to-many. And we are now in a world that we are socially connected, and we are following people, whether it be on Twitter or on Facebook. And, there is some value in terms of those messages that are going out. So whether it be, the television shows that people are watching or discussions about a brand. So I think it's certainly very, very important to be able to understand how you can tap into those conversations, certainly at scale, but also just understanding what is the impact of, the value of someone liking something or providing positive feedback or even negative feedback. And more importantly, how do you react to it?
Some of that's presentation layer too, right? So if, to your point, in my Facebook page, I have all that stuff on the right rail. That's people watching, consuming, et cetera. I feel like if I'm in Go and I am, through my social graph, being able to see what people who are my friends that also watch HBO content, maybe it's not in Go, but they watch it other places, that has a little more relevancy if it's in my app, as opposed to kind of showing up in the billboard sort of fashion in Facebook only. And I think that's the kind of thing, that might be relevant to me, to be able to see for a recommendation as to what I want to watch next in Go or on HBO Linear or on demand or whatever.
So you think these apps have some sort of contextualization to them?
I think it's the what is it and where is it, right? And so if you're in the Go app, you might want to have a different list of stuff to be recommended as opposed to if you're getting it in Manhattan or if you're getting it on Facebook or you're getting it on HBO Connect. And I think that's to your point, the one-to-many, it just is, okay, great, well, now I'm going to put on blast everything I'm watching, which I'm actually not in a total in favor of. I think that should be up to viewer discretion at all times for obvious reasons.
I mean, one of the things though is, there is massive experimentation going on right now, which I think is a terrific thing. And so sometimes as consumers or, you know, as an industry, we react to, you know, say a feature that Facebook has launched literally 6 months ago. 6 months from now, I can tell you it'll be completely different. So I think I think it's kind of good that the industry, social networking as well as entertainment, are testing the limits and seeing what consumers are appreciating or not. If you, you know, the example of the Spotify, for example, already, you know, Facebook has adjusted the amount, the way it's treated, more like, and I think the way it's viewed is instead of being in your face, seeing sort of, you know, things you don't really care about, whether you want to know if your friends are listening or watching to something, it's now getting into the background, but the information is there, meaning for an app like Fanhattan, for example, now we can connect to that information, and to your point, make it relevant,
right.
Because if you connect through Facebook, inside Fanhattan, it'll do only one thing. It's just going to extract the movies on the TV shows you liked recently or you watched recently, and it's going to organize this information and sort it so that you can see, okay, last week, most of your friends liked this TV show, or all-time best movie liked by your friends, this is it. And if you want to access it, you can, and if you don't want to, there are other ways you can discover content inside the app. So here, it's a way to leverage the social information that's been gathered, but instead of you as a consumer watching it on Facebook, which is not necessarily what you want to do, you get it in context. And I think this is really the most important thing, is to connect the utility of watching the content or discovering it or checking out the schedule, something that's very utilitarian at the end of the day and not social, and bring that social experience here so that I get it when I want it, which is not when I'm checking my Facebook
page. At the
place
that I want it, right?
Exactly.
At the point, the decision-making time when I'm actually most inclined to sort of use it as a reference point.
Spoken like a true marketer. So the phrase that's getting a lot of traction on the feed is this, what you said, Jack, about switching from impressions to expressions. Mm-hmm. I think that has two sides of a coin. One is for those of us who are in the media business, those expressions mean a lot more, but right now they don't have currency, right? We haven't gotten to a currency model for expressions or engagement or any of these words that we like to use. And then from a consumer model or from an audience model, like what value does that bring for the audience, right? Maybe you could talk a little bit more about what you mean by impressions to expressions.
So when we talk about impressions, it's really things in the television world that we're all used to, which is, you know, the Nielsen rating points. So how many people are watching my television shows, exposed to my commercials, gross rating points, target rating points. So those are what we would call the impressions of activity that takes place and, you know, is largely the currency in the TV industry. It's the expressions of the consumers that I think, from where we are right now in terms of social media, the world of social media continuing to grow very rapidly, colliding with linear TV, that is creating this new opportunity in the space of social TV, in that there is now the ability to tap into and understand what is that level of engagement of my consumers. You know, again, as I talked about before, for the better part of the 60-year history of television, it has been sort of a one-way form of communication where content of television shows or commercials are pushed out to consumers. But now, through these other devices, I won't say second screen because I think we just outlawed that word before. But it is being able to tap into that and understand, you know, what exactly are they saying and how can you differentiate from that? So, you know, from the TV side, if there's a way to differentiate the value of an audience based upon the level of engagement where they're actually talking about the show, the conversations about a brand that is advertising on a television show, whether it be standard TV commercials or even integrations into TV shows where people are actually talking about it. That's really where I think the level of expressions are become critically important. But also more importantly, when we take a look at the expressions of consumers, it is the idea that, you know, I tweet something or I post it on Facebook, I do have people that follow me or I've got people that are connected to me. And what is the impact of that message on other people that might be exposed to that message?
Let's imagine, so I might be moving into the future a little bit, but Nielsen ratings are sort of this little note you get, and it says, here's how you did, right? It's like the grade report card in kindergarten. You can't fix it. Once you get that grade, you're just sort of stuck with it, right? So it's not, it's actionable only in a sense that you have to make up for ground that you lost in many cases, right? But if we think about, is there a way that you're gathering analytics now, mostly to serve the media industry, that actually could serve the consumer? Right, so if you turn Bluefin on its head and said, Could people actually have an impact on how the media industry moves forward in programming and product development, right? So, I mean, what do you guys think about that?
Yeah. So I think that's a provocative idea, and you as chief provocateur, I appreciate that coming from you. I think that could be an evolutionary state. I would say at HBO that would be a bad turn for us to be, you know, crowdsourcing programming development. I think that's something that's like moth to flame people kind of go towards because it feels like it's, of course, you're going to involve the community and think about the next kind of show or the next. I would feel better about that from a product development perspective in terms of how do you want to engage with our content and what do you want to experience? And we do that informally without turning Bluefin on its ear, even just from research, you know, figuring out what people are plugged into and what they like or don't like and making sure we're listening to it. But from a programming perspective, I don't know if that's the best use of the collective.
But what does engage even really mean?
I know. We have this conversation all the time, right? I know. For engage for us, though, when you're a subscription service, right, and you're not advertiser-supported, engagement is big. We know that an engaged consumer, and even if it's as basic as, like, that person who tweets a couple times, puts something on their Facebook, likes us on, you know, the True Blood Facebook page, that's somewhat of a hand raiser. If you're kind of raising your hand, you're more likely to every month look at your bill and be like, you know what, I like HBO this month, so I'm going to stay on. It's a really simple thing, and that engagement means something to us. The number of people who come to HBO.com, if you register on HBO.com, if you sign up for Go, if you engage with us on the Facebook page, it does mean something. It's not as quantifiable as some of the impression, the Nielsen numbers and all, UV and all that stuff, but we know it's important, and it does pay off in the life cycle of a consumer, of a subscriber, which just means revenue somewhere. Putting that to the finance guys is the next stage.
So unlike Allison, that's for us, we're completely embracing this, because obviously given what we're doing, we're completely, as much as creativity should be sort of protected and not just fed by your users, obviously, from our standpoint, from a product standpoint, that's exactly what we're trying to do. We're tracking everything that our users are doing and measuring the kind of engagement. So engagement, we're trying to define it specifically. And the way we're going about it is, for example, trying to link together all the different places on the web where a show has some content. So when you think about it, that's obviously the place we can watch it. Mm-hmm. So a service like iTunes or HBO Go or Xfinity, etc. The reviews, the Facebook page, the Twitter page, the soundtrack on iTunes, the e-commerce on Amazon, where I can find the T-shirts, the games. The games you can download on your iPad that have, So when you think about a brand, because, as a studio, you create brands, right? Mm-hmm. And you that brand is sort of deployed then across multiple formats. We think consumers, that's the level at which they like to think of a show. If they like Game of Thrones, they'll watch the show. That's the first level of engagement. And then if they want to go beyond, they'll try to find everything about it.
Right.
And so that's a way of measuring engagement. So we tie all those services together, and then we can see, and we can tell you, on a particular show like this, most people who watch it also download the iPad app.
Well, you guys are doing that in the aggregate. We're doing that at HBO and within our own ecosystem, and I think those two can peacefully coexist.
Absolutely.
In that way, our goal is to make sure that we are on HBO properties, engagement, tools, tactics, everything that we need needs to happen around the show. And then in the products as well, and then outside of that too. So it doesn't have to be on one of our properties, but those all should link together so that a consumer, to your point, wants to watch Game of Thrones on Go, talk about it in on Twitter or tweet or come to HBO Connect, or go find a T-shirt at the HBO shop. T-shirt, that's so lame. Sword maybe. Game.
The throne.
The throne. Sure. Yeah. For $3 million, we're selling this throne. That should all be able to be within, overused term also, a one-click ability for the consumer to get there. And I'd like to keep them within so that I can track them and kind of make sure that, not individually, but just make sure that that kind of engagement level happens with us, within us. But it can happen elsewhere too. And it should, and it will.
So that's a great comment that we're pissing people off because, not us personally.
Right now,
not
currently?
Personally, yeah. Which is on the list of don't do's.
Right.
So I want to address this, and maybe this person can ask a question to kind of extend this idea, because I think it's really interesting, which is that this is, to quote just so you don't take this personally, old stodgy marketing execs trying to squeeze social into old marketing ideas. So do you feel like you're trapped into some old marketing model? And what's breakout, right? What feels like breakout? I don't know, Jack. So the idea of taking data that we didn't have access to before, I think it's important to realize for media companies, we don't have access to the set-top box data. So we fly like in the dark a lot. So we sort of have to make guesses, right? So the idea of having something like social analytics, where you're getting information from a number of sources and a very different perspective, is opening our minds to understanding what is the really big picture here. So maybe, Jack, you could just start talking about some of the changes that you see shifting and how people are pursuing this.
Yeah, so I think that's a good point because, again, there is a standard currency in place in terms of the Nielsen ratings about how many people are watching the television shows. And, this is a new layer of information with a new technology that really hasn't been seen before. And as I talked about earlier, this is something that, is providing the opportunity to close the audience feedback loop between consumers and not only the TV media companies, but also the marketers and the brands. So I think if anything, it's very early stage in terms of how people are looking to use this information. For companies that we've been talking to about the Bluefin Lab service, it's, how can I use this to better support my ad sales efforts, to differentiate the value of my audience, to show that this is why I should be able to command a higher CPM level when all other things are equal. So if I've got a similar Nielsen rating point or demographic, can the social level of engagement of an audience be something that, can kind of be that tiebreaker? So I think that's one part of it. But I think the other part is that from just a marketer and brand perspective, and we actually had one client last week there where we had something published in Ad Age where, because of the social media data that we were able to provide to them in the analytics, what happened was that they came out with a campaign, and it was Fox Sports, it was an AdAge.com just the other day, they had this new campaign, I think it was the Fox Sports Girl, so it was a little bit racy, and, they put all this time and effort into it, into three key markets, including Detroit, and when the ad campaign came out, they immediately received a few complaints about it. They thought that it was, being exploitative, it was in bad taste, and they, they sort of went through that critical moment of, okay, we're getting some bad feedback here. What should we do? Should we pull the campaign and basically scrap all the money that had gone into it in terms of the planning and the creative and the production, et cetera? But because they had some of the Bluefin data that was able to show them from social media the direct feedback of consumers that were exposed to these television commercials, what they found was that overwhelmingly it was very positive in terms of the feedback. And we were actually then able to break that down on an ongoing basis during the course of the actual campaign to provide the details as far as what were people saying. Was it positive, negative, neutral activity? And I think it was overwhelmingly positive from the data that we shared. And the client even came back to us and said, had it not been for this type of information and data, which is essentially real-time information, they probably would have pulled the campaign just based upon some of those initial complaints about, the exposure to the commercial. So I think these are some of the early ways that we're starting to find, really savvy marketers and companies really trying to embrace this and use this in addition to some of the other metrics that have long been in place within the television industry.
I think that, with a reference to the stodgy piece, that's too bad. I know. I've now fallen into the stodgy category. I can definitely tell that by showing up here in Austin, and my age category is the third bracket. I think what Rhonda said about media companies is really true. This is a new sort of era for us, and it's a new, if you understand consumer data and you understand how media companies, particularly television media companies, work, and that the consumer data is owned by the distributors, right? So telco, satellite, cable operators. And when you think about social being around consumer data, when I think about how we have evolved at a company, it's not the lightning speed of others who are more D2C or who are also, all internet companies. We have really evolved from what used to be social as a media tactic handled by the agency with a bunch of kids who were like working on the HBO account at 1 second and turned around and worked on the Pepsi account the next second. No tie to the brand, no conversation with consumers, no perspective around like, hey, this is a groundswell of what's happening around our show, and being able to feed that back into the machine, frankly, that makes all that magic happen. We've taken it from that standpoint, which was really only about 3 or 4 years ago, into bringing that stuff in-house and having a fully dedicated social team in-house kind of monitoring 24/7, as they can attest, around what's happening on all of our pages and experimenting with stuff, building stuff like Connect, which would have never gotten built at HBO before, like, what is it doing? Oh, you're pulling in feeds? What are they saying? And we're really celebrating that kind of activity, at least, you know, for some level of experimentation. And now we're evolving into the productization side to it. And how do we feel about not doing it just as a tactic, not doing it just as marketing or as some sort of offshoot of advertising or promotional or, you know, sponsory type stuff, but really putting it into the product and creating an experience through tools within a suite of platform products across the board. And I think that is, if I look at that over the last 4 years, it's not rapid pace acceleration, but it is some real growth and movement on our part, HBO's part, to get there and get everybody comfortable with it and get everyone comfortable with evaluation, meaning like the metrics and what that spend gets you in terms and what does engagement mean and why is that important. And so it's, you know, it doesn't fall into the lightning fast speed of others, but I think we're on the right track.
So I knew I should have brought my hoodie today. No. So, but I think that point is actually that this person on Twitter made is actually really good, because the danger is sort of trying to sort of own the conversation,
yeah,
you know,
right.
And this is such a typical thing that marketers do. And so here, you know, the art is going to be to sort of enable the discussion, but have sort of consumers feel like they own it, mm-hmm. right? And it's not something that's kind of you know, sort of artificial. The big issue I see, and it's more on the broadcaster side, so people who make money with their content, mostly with advertising, is that, you know, when we talk to them, they're extremely excited about the social TV and about second screen experience, mostly because they see it as a way to sort of make more money per show, and then solely that. And so as a result, every idea or project they have around a second screen experience is tied to an ad campaign. And I think, like, if this is the way this is going to happen, it's going to be a disaster.
Exactly.
Because right now, you know, first of all, you know, it creates friction all the time when you sort of have advertising around content. But specifically around social, if you look at the advertising models, they're extremely not in your face, you know, whether it's on Twitter or on Facebook. And so all of a sudden, if you start to have this kludgy experience that has sort of ads everywhere that are tied to the screen, I think this is clearly not going to take off that way. So that, and then the problem is, obviously, as an industry, people are looking at ways to monetize it. So this is going to be quite of a challenge, in my sense, in order to sort of find, sort of in a sort of non-revenue model-driven way, find experiences that people are going to latch onto.
So that's great. Another great question here that says, is there a risk that, I think this is part of what you were suggesting, is that is there a risk of focusing on data that you lose your professional judgment about what represents great content, right? Did you have that? Ever have those conversations? Do you see that happening? Maybe you have some examples of where the resonance back from people discussing actually had a positive impact, and maybe think about where you just would rather choose to ignore it, right?
I'm just trying. I mean, not on the. I think I won't speak about the programming side. I'll speak about the product side, since that's my end of the end of it. So I think feedback, firehose feedback from consumers in some way is always. I mean, it has to be placed into some kind of roadmap and, you know, configured in terms of impact and where it fits across of everything that we need to be doing. But I don't think that should ever be turned off. It, you know, you're kind of in a bubble when you're launching products and you're looking at things and you sort of, you launch it and then you're thinking you launched this amazing piece and then you find out 3 seconds later after it launched you missed something. Or why didn't it have X? Or when is it going to get to Y? And I think those are kind of important sort of reality checks that people need to have in companies, particularly big companies, as they launch products. And social provides a really good way to sort of key into that stuff. You can't respond to everything. And in some ways, you have to have some measurement tools to kind of understand where the 80-20 rule is and where to place your focus. But I think it's incredibly important as we shape engagement experiences and new experiences for consumers and as we experiment with a really ever-changing sort of environment. I mean, I think that's the, you know, the other thing that we have, not to pivot off too much of this, but, you know, we're building enterprise-level support on products and platforms that, you know, if we go too far off to one side or the other, then we're going to be stuck with something, to your point about like the Game of Thrones only app that is only applicable for Game of Thrones. And I can't scale that experience across the board to True Blood or other kinds of titles. That's a big thing we have to manage. So taking in the input from social, figuring out what's the most important piece and then sort of productizing it across the board for Go. And I think it's important on a product side.
So can we talk a little bit about, so we spent a lot of time on HBO and Fenn Hatton. Let's just talk about maybe some of the things that you guys have observed other people doing that you thought were really impressive or sort of inspirational other areas, other works in social TV that you found provocative?
Well, I think this past year's Super Bowl was pretty telling in terms of when you take a look at all the commercials, and the Super Bowl is the Super Bowl of TV advertising creative, right? So, you know, great commercials are being put forth, a lot of money being spent in terms of the 30-second spot. And I think for me what was really interesting is that, you know, for the first time you were hearing I think it was something like one-third of all the ads were Shazamable, where basically consumers had the ability to, you know, take their phones if they had the Shazam application on it, you know, point it and then get immediate information on the brands that were being advertised. So I think that was certainly pretty groundbreaking just in terms of, you know, a new use of technology for, you know, what is the biggest event in terms of television advertising. So I think it'll be interesting to kind of see, you know, the follow-on of that as far as more television commercials that try to use those different types of technology and the type of information that they start to get back from consumers.
Yeah, so that's like an entree into automatic content recognition, right? Whether it's Shazam or It's Who Now or any kind of video recognition like TV Tac. And so the idea there is to actually now extend opportunities. So right now we're in the coupon phase, right? You get coupons, and I feel a little bit like throwback, like when you get a screensaver.
Right.
I don't know what that is, but you get one now. So the idea is to say, well, that's great, but how do then you use that information, or what about this content recognition is really compelling, right? So have you guys tried content recognition yet? Have you thought about it?
Yeah, we've thought about it. I mean, I think it's kind of cool if you build. It feels very, in some ways, tactical in the sense that, you know, you use some sort of ACR technology and drive them to register to grow, or get a piece of a deleted scene or some kind of thing like that to build for a business case or a business reason. You know, I'd rather figure out a way to use ACR to build if I'm watching HBO on linear on demand, whatever it is, and then in an iPad, you know, create. That obviously trigger like the ABC app that did that too, you know, where my generation app, you know, where it's triggering content based on ACR. We're doing kind of contextual content interlaid in an interactive experience based on time coding in the asset itself, less from an audio trigger and more like time trigger, which has to be pre-thought.
Right.
But so does the ACR technology too. I mean, there's a whimsical notion around like holding up your Shazam and like pulling in content, but that has to be planned too.
Yeah.
At least it would be on our side in order to create the right experience. So.
Yeah, I thought ABC did a great job with the Grey's Anatomy app, right? Because when that show's pretty old now, but Grey's Anatomy, for me, the cool thing was the indie music, and you never really knew, like, who is that band? And the whole, so while you're watching that show, the thing for me was pulling in all that indie, right, all the indie music. And so the app itself had this trigger where you could go tell you who was playing and go right to iTunes and purchase that content, right? So that's now taking that media experience and extending it now in a totally different way.
Right.
I think
it's feeding the associative drift too, right? So you get that.
I don't know what associative drift means.
It is in a product. So it's linking off to other stuff. It's what Jules was talking about too. So, you know, if I'm on, again, I'm Game of Thrones, April 1st. You know, if I'm watching Game of Thrones and I want to go get the sword, I want to see what's happening, that's what that is. You should be able to kind of, I shouldn't have to close an app and then go to my, you know, my laptop or pick up my phone. There should be some level of drift that we can support.
So that's interesting because we talked about earlier sort of having that quiet space where people can just be totally immersed in the dramatic series without interrupting them. So those experiences have to be delivered in really subtle ways, right, so that you don't interrupt
and annoy
that flow
and
that immersion. Yeah.
And I think that's the challenge on the product side, particularly as it relates to a co-viewing experience. Co meaning like I'm watching in an app and then all these tools are around in that viewing experience. That's challenging.
So can we take a little bit of a break and ask them, does anyone have some questions they want to, right, awesome, thanks. Right there in the front.
Hey, Chad Powersman, Scripps Networks.
Hey.
What role do you guys think spoilers have in social TV for Allison, right? Like, I'm sitting in my living room and that holy shit moment of getting their head chopped off or shot in the head.
Don't tell anyone.
Yeah. For anyone who hasn't seen it, out on Blu-ray. And Jack, I'd love to see, like, you know, for something like American Idol, are people... Like, I know people that, you know, go dark, quote-unquote, because they don't want to get that spoiler. But in person, that experience is amazing, sitting with people in my living room. But, how, you know, what does that translate to in a social web, social TV arena?
That's a great question.
We have a lot of people that go dark east, west coast. You know, that I don't want to hear what happened on the East Coast because I'm on the West Coast, and just everyone, you know, and I think, you know, the example for Game of Thrones that you gave is a perfect example. I mean, it was amazing the amount of energy around when, no, my God, they did not, you know, when that happened. And I think that's kind of self-selected spoilers, right? If it's important to you, you'll kind of turn that down for when you want to watch. But at the same point, so let's the good example is like that happens Sunday night. And maybe I didn't get a chance to watch Sunday night and I DVR'd it and I want to watch it on Wednesday. Is that energy and heat still relevant on Wednesday? You know, I'm going to participate on it because Monday I'm going to be on Twitter in some capacity. I'm going to see it and say, ah, excellent. Well, I'll tune in on Wednesday. It's hard to kind of tune that all out in the service of a spoiler for a show. You know, but I think it's something that we see behaviorally people do on their own and then try to make sure that they catch up very quickly so that they're not left out on Monday. Which is kind of interesting. Even in Go, which is an on-demand product, you know, you can watch it anytime, 4 a.m. in the morning on Monday. People zero in on Sunday very quickly because they want to be part of that conversation, even though they have the flexibility to do otherwise.
Yeah, that is a great question. I think, a couple things. When the spoiler moment is one where, you know, there's a live television viewing and then there's, you know, someone DVRing, you know, the show and watching it later. And I think during the live, you do want to kind of, you don't want to have other people telling you exactly what's happening and you want to kind of, you know, avoid not being able to enjoy that moment, right? So I think when it kind of comes to that, you know, for something like DVR, and we get this question quite a bit because at Bluefin Labs, we are focused on the live TV viewing environment where we're measuring a plus or minus 3-hour window currently. We're looking to also expand in terms of like other views of our data, but that is questions that we'll get, which is, you know, people will DVR my programming, and depending upon the show and the network, it could be a significant percentage of that audience. So I think where it really kind of comes into play is that, you know, for spoiler moments, I know personally, I think it was Boardwalk Empire, I missed the season finale, so sorry, Allison, but right before I was about to watch a repeat of it, I was sitting down with my wife, and my wife was saying, oh, there's this incredible moment on Boardwalk Empire, and I was literally just about to watch it, and I sat there, and I was like, well, let me just go online, and I literally checked, and I was like, oh, Jimmy got killed at the end. So she was like, why would you do that? And I was like, well, you know, because it was available, and I didn't want to have to wait. So I kind of spoiled it myself to a certain extent.
You forgot to say spoiler alert before you said that.
Yeah,
exactly. All right, I'm going to take one in the back.
Thank you. My name is Walter. I'm at FuseLogic on Twitter, and I have a question for you. I was in that session last year. How concerned are you with all this infrastructure that you're building for sharing and engagement that this is going to be a shiny new toy that's a fad and it will become saturated with this stuff and won't engage anymore?
Yeah, I'm concerned with that. that's, I think, the big challenge I was speaking to earlier is figuring out to get the right funding, right, to kind of build out all the infrastructure and the database, everything that's required to kind of create these experiences and making sure that these are key experiences that are going to last across the board so that we can, you know, maximize that investment in it. And that's part of the kind of education, I think, that has to happen in digital particularly in big media companies is that, you know, I know this doesn't you want to talk about database technology and API technology and back-end flexibility and all that kind of stuff and a supportable, flexible architecture, blah, blah, blah. When you start to talk about to the finance guys about that stuff, they're like, huh? How about a billboard? I know exactly what that costs and how to size that. And I think that's it's a fear on my part that we're going to build the big it, and then it's going to, you know, not be able to be leveraged later on. But I think that's our job to kind of figure out what that is.
But if you connect people to each other, that is it. That's the ultimate motivation, to be connected to other people.
Right.
Whatever you build that gets people connected to one another can't be wasted.
Right.
Yeah. I think actually I'm not too concerned about that because if you look at the experimentation that's going on, it's a pendulum and it'll go to an extreme and then it'll come back. But at the end of the day, the need for people to actually talk about, about what they're watching is there. So I think, you know, also you'll have, you know, shows where you really don't want to engage and then you don't have to. What you want to provide consumers is sort of different tools. So if they really are geeks about a particular show, they can immerse as much as they want and read everything. And then if they don't want to, they don't have to. I don't think that's going to be a challenge. You know, again, you look at Facebook and every time they launch a new feature, it goes too far and then they bring it back and then it finds its equilibrium. And I think that's part of the experimentation right now. So consumers will you know, they'll make the choices, but I don't think it'll disappear for sure.
In the front,
right.
Yeah, so you talked about engagement earlier, and I think with HBO especially connecting directly to consumers, I think HBO is unique in that everyone loves HBO and everyone hates the cable companies. And so, you know, do you find that in that engagement directly with the consumers that there's this real request or need for you to go directly to consumers? Do you feel that pressure growing? Do you think that's going to change?
You know, I think that's there's always that kind of conversation around, like, why can't I just get something directly? And so we hear it. But I mainly when people connect with us, it's less they kind of accept the fact that that's the distribution method that they get it, you know, through, whatever that is, and whether they're unhappy with it or happy with it. And then the conversation really becomes about the shows and about the characters and about the talent and about the set scenery and when's it coming back and, you know, how do I get access to XYZ? That because that's the passion points. They're not coming to us to sort of, you know, complain necessarily about the distributor. We definitely, I mean, you can see it. People do say, hey, when can we get it over the top or what, something like that. But that's not a pressure point for us in terms of the amount of conversation that comes around that. And it's also not the dialogue that they seem to gravitate to with us.
Okay, and you don't see. Are you concerned over time that your brand?
So you get like one question.
Brand?
What is it?
There you go.
No, I'm just kidding. We'll come back to you. Yeah.
Hi, my name's Will. I'm over from the BBC in London. And I just wanted to ask, really, what's your vision for social creatively? Do you see it moving from being the back channel to actually changing the TV content?
Yes, I do. Absolutely, unequivocally. We were supposed to talk about this for the last 2 minutes, but the idea of one-hour programming blocks, right, and those sort of things, I think all of those have to go. I think they all model like this industrial age mindset of factories and how we churn out things and package things. Connecting humans through media has to change. This is just me. Mm-hmm. Allison's looking at me again,
no,
like
no,
I have three
cool
heads. It completely has to shift, right? And technology will enable really amazing new media experiences where it's not about a show. It's like what you live. Right, so context-aware technologies, ambient information, are going to power really interesting new media experiences, for lack of a better word. That's just me.
I agree with that, though. I just, you know, what we were talking about earlier was more of the using social tools as a way to kind of get crowd community input into what programming is. I think it's, you know, HBO should always do what HBO does best, which is creating content that responds to whatever consumer needs are out there. So if it becomes like the trend starts to become it's 25-minute show segments, 2-minute show segments, whatever it is that people need to be engaging with, if we are doing our job right, then we will follow that as well. And we have like smart programmers who know and have their fingers into the creative content community that are kind of monitoring that. And I think that's our job at HBO to kind of keep that on the pulse.
What do you think, Jack?
I'm sorry?
What do you think?
No, I totally agree. I think it's one of those things where there's been this collision between the two worlds. Again, linear TV, sight, sound, motion continues to grow, huge for entertainment value. And with social media, that also continues to grow, the ability to tap into these conversations to eventually change the landscape. I mean, it certainly will not happen quickly, but I think certainly with this technology that it could be a great opportunity.
Thanks. Let me go. Let me switch to the back. Sorry.
Thank you. Sorry. You talk about social TV, and we understand that social TV can enhance linear TV and regular TV. But when you speak to one to N, and with the conversation is one to one, and what is about the many to many? I mean, today the reception, the mode of reception is conversation. So how and when it will be that everybody will be a channel, so a really, really many-to-many. What do you think about that feature in television, many-to-many?
I think it's already there. In terms of, you know, if you have today on the web people who are becoming, you know, really experts about a show, then other people are following them and listening to what they say. So I think all of that exists. It's the good thing about the tools today is that they... you have a place that depends on your level of engagement with the show, and so you also have experts that are there that are creating, that are not associated with the show itself, but creating content about it. You have a fan base, and you know, sort of. And so the challenge right now, and I think this is a theme for most of the questions that are here, and kind of the themes we talked about, is a lot of the building blocks are there, right? And then the challenge is to tie them together in a way that feels natural for consumers to engage with. And that is, I think, whether it's the technology with the content recognition, whether it's, you know, the advertising, whether it's too much content, all the questions, this is, there's a lot of the tools, and I think there's a lot of experimentation, and I personally think it actually is moving really fast for an industry like entertainment. I'm really amazed at the pace at which, like, you know, you think about, you know, 2 years ago, there was no other way you could watch content than just literally on your television. Yeah. Now you can actually access many shows on different devices. So, anyway, the many-to-many question, I think it's, again, a question of connecting the right tools together and making that easy for consumers to access.
Thanks. In the front.
Hi, I'm Shamara, and I'd like to... Sorry, this is tall. I'd like to mine the collective wisdom of the panel for some advice for launching independent content. Assume it's well-funded independent content that has a marketing budget, specifically in regards to discovery before it launches. When something launches, there's stuff to talk about. What are best practices for using social tools for launching new stuff when you don't have the power of a brand like HBO behind you that people know and recognize?
Question.
That's a good question.
Cheers.
The best strategy is to actually start engaging a fan base when you're creating the content. That's what we've seen work best. So you start to build a fan base even as you're creating the content, and then that fan base becomes marketers, and because of all the tools, again, that are out there, start building essentially noise around your product. That's the first in terms of building kind of the echo chamber. And then you have a distribution challenge, which is also being addressed because, you can find sort of different places where you can distribute your content and have it tied to places that is going to make, you know, your content alongside or presented alongside sort of more mainstream or, you know, higher budget TV shows or movies. So that's what you've seen. I'm on the board of a film festival called CineQuest, and there's a lot of movie makers that are doing this right now, and I think you're seeing many examples of that today.
Thanks. Yeah.
I was just wondering, I guess this is for you, Ms. Moore, but really for anybody. Do the creators of the shows themselves have much say into how their properties are socialized and presented and enhanced and things like that? I mean, I could see how, I don't know either David Lynch or David Simon personally, but I could see how maybe they wouldn't be that into the enhanced fan experience. And if the creator is into the enhanced fan experience, wouldn't approving all of the backstory and all the other stuff distract from the incredible amount of time it takes to create just a good TV show?
Yeah. No, it's a great question. It's a real balance that we sort of maintain. I can say that we had we've had the longstanding relationship with show creators ever since HBO.com was formed about creating, and you know, in the 1.0 version, right, of extra contextual content on .com. And so a lot of that was sort of talking to the show creators and talking to the talent about thinking about extra content, extra video content first, right? That actually helped explain the show, that was contextual to the show, that was valuable. It wasn't shill, it wasn't for interstitial, it wasn't for, you know, it was supposed to market something, there wasn't an advertiser sponsorship component to it. And, you know, in some ways, we're really lucky in that way because we can treat a lot of the contextual content that we create, particularly from the video side, as true content. You know, the writers get involved. There are junior writers that are assigned that write kind of character lines. Then we kind of morphed into blogs. You know, we do character blogs, particularly for True Blood, and those are written by the show writers. I think a lot of that is around the respect and honor of the creative process without sounding too, like, you know, ivory tower-ish about it. But we maintain to kind of expose what it is that we'd like to do, figure out how the comfortability levels that they have with, you know, creating, and everyone's different. You know, Michael Mann might be different than, you know, David Simon might be different than Alan Ball. And figuring out where those parameters are and then coming back to them with a plan that they feel honors what they're trying to do and maybe even helps amplify it. All of our show creators, they're into the fans. I mean, anyone that creates content and finds people that loves their stuff who are just, like, creating homages to their content, their shows and their blogs, that's an incredible thing as a creator to kind of see that, particularly in a such a visceral way on the web, you know, where you can really feel that pulsing out. So I feel like we have a great collaboration with the show creators, and they trust us, and so that's just kind of making sure that as we go into these new areas, we fully explain what it is that we're doing and make sure that we have their buy-in and participation. That's key. It can't be done outside of them.
can a creator even make a show anymore where it's just like, nope, Sundays 9 to 10, fuck it, that's all you get? Like, can you even do that?
That's not my my gig. Whoever decides Sundays at 10 or otherwise is somebody else. But to me, once the show is on board and locked into the HBO schedule, we light up on the, as a digital team and kind of come to them and figure out how we sort of partner with them and get in early, I should say, too, you know, at the start of production, right? So before they start production, we kind of get an idea of how the whole storyline's going and then come back with ideas so that we're not taxing the set either, because we have to be respectful to your point. They're making a show here, you know, with all the deadlines that have gone around for years about creating content. And so how do we do that in a way that respects not only their kind of intellectual property, but also their time?
Thanks. Next one.
Hi, I'm Adina DeMonte. I'm the director of marketing at Badgeville, the behavior platform. And I was here probably at a very similar panel last year. And I know we all hate buzzwords. I hate them just as much as the next person. But one thing we haven't talked about today is kind of this concept of gamification and also the transmedia experiences. I hate the word, too. I work for the leader in gamification, and I hate the word. But this is a panel on a social web of things, and as mobile smartphones just surpass feature phones in the U.S. and all these social TV and everything's getting connected, you know, how do you guys think about whether it's gamification or just behavior and rewarding and incentivizing behavior? What's changed in the last year? Because I know a year ago it was completely laughed out of the room, but I feel like things are changing in lots of industries, and I want to know what's going on. We're working with companies in media and entertainment as well, but I'm curious from your perspectives what you're seeing.
Yeah, we're interested in it. I mean, I think we're, you know, we're really just evaluating that now and figuring out what feels right, and what measurements do you base the gamification sort of reward systems to? And, you know, is it clout scores? Is it blog participation? Is it bad? We're just trying to figure out what are the things that you're actually pushing people to engage with, and then what are the reward systems, and what's sustainable?
We don't need no stinking badges.
Right. So I'm not a big badge.
So if you mean by gamification, they create a media experience where people feel mastery, autonomy, control, right? True game mechanics, where now we take media, we say, how do we actually do this programming? So we're building an experience.
Is that what you're speaking about?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what we think about it at Badgeville is very much about the behavior. I know we're called Badgeville, but a lot of our customers don't even use badges. So it's just about tracking user behavior across all your connected experiences and then be able to create lots of stuff on top of it.
The new badge, whatever the new phrase to the badge is.
I think truly, if you can start to think about media experiences that are experiences, right? They're based on giving people this feeling that they are truly autonomous, that they have some mastery and control over that experience, like good game developers do, then that's a big win. We have not cracked that nut yet, right? But it's a very positive thing. If it becomes this sort of artificial rewards thing, right, that looks very extrinsic versus intrinsic, then I believe that's a failure.
Got it. Cool. Thank you.
So we're... No, we got to stop.
Oh, yeah. Well.
I'm sorry. I wasn't even paying attention.
He gave you the big.
He did. He gave me the big. Get off. So thanks so much for listening. We appreciate it.
Thank you.